Thank you for listening to audio from Midway Mennonite Church. You can also listen to our sermons each week by subscribing to the Midway Mennonite Podcast. If you live in the Mahoning County or Columbiana County area, we'd love for you to come engage with our faith community. For directions and worship times, visit us at Facebook or at MidwayMennonite.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, today's scripture reading is Luke 18, 1 to 8. Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. He said, "In a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with a plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' For some time he refused. But finally, he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?"
Good morning. If you are visiting, we are in a series called Stories from the Road. We're looking at parables in the Gospel of Luke. We've been here for about probably 6 weeks by now. And Luke's got this section in the middle of his Gospel, which is called the travel narrative. So we see this movement from Galilee, where Jesus' ministry began, to Jerusalem, where he will eventually die. And it's not a straightforward, straight shot, but Luke wants us to see this as a journey. And Jesus is telling stories on this journey. So we're actually getting closer to Jerusalem at this point. And this parable starts out a little different than some of the other ones. Luke actually gives us a little commentary on it before the story. We don't usually get that. And he's going to give us a heads up on what this story is going to be about and why Jesus told it. So verse 1, he says, "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up." So again, like we were 2 weeks ago in the parable of the dishonest manager or the shrewd manager, this is a parable told to Jesus' disciples. So we need to hear that in that context. And it's a parable about prayer. It's teaching us something about prayer, which is interesting because, so we're coming to the end of this journey, and Jesus is teaching his disciples about prayer. And he did something exactly the same at the beginning of this journey. So back in chapter 11, a disciple comes to Jesus and says, "Lord, teach us to pray." And what does Jesus teach them? I hope you know this prayer because we spent a long time with it earlier this year. It's the Lord's Prayer, right? So Jesus says, "When you pray, say," and we get the Lucan version of the Lord's Prayer. And now here we are at the end of the journey, and Luke is saying, here's a story that Jesus is telling of why you should always pray. So when you pray, always pray. So Jesus assumes that his followers are going to be people of prayer. They're going to be praying. And so we have this like really clear application really early in the sermon is that as people of Jesus, we are people of prayer. Basic, but I think it's a good to remember. Always don't give up. And actually the literal translation is, which I think is better, it's not, the NIV says don't give up, but it says is don't lose heart. Always pray, don't lose heart. And when Jesus taught, go back to the Lord's Prayer with me, when Jesus taught the Lord's Prayer, he also followed that teaching with a parable. And it has actually a lot of similarities to this one. You probably remember this. This is a story about the guy who goes and knocks on the door of a friend at midnight. He's asking for bread. The guy inside basically says, "Get lost. The door is locked. My kids are in bed. Don't bother me." And Jesus says, that guy standing there audaciously knocking on the door at midnight, he's eventually going to get some bread because he's so persistent. So we've got this theme of persistence. And then we have this well-known line. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. In other words, God hears your prayers. God answers your requests. So don't be afraid to ask. Prayer makes a difference. I mentioned the Lord's Prayer. I think some of us need to be reminded that prayer makes a difference. And we affirm that as true. The challenge, though, is if you are doing what Jesus is saying and you're engaging in a life of prayer, you will at some time feel like you're doing a lot of asking and in response hearing a lot of silence. You're going to be doing a lot of seeking and you're going to not be doing a lot of finding. You're going to be doing a lot of knocking on the door and that door does not seem to be open. So Eugene Peterson, I love this, he writes, "The remarkable thing about prayer is not that so many people pray, it's that so many of us keep at it when it seems like so often we have so little to show." And he compares it to a leaky bucket. I think you farm kids will resonate with this. But Peterson says, it's like you get this bucket, and you go down to the creek or whatever, and you fill it up, and it's leaky. And so it's leaking all the way home. And by the time you get home, all you got is an empty bucket. And there's nothing to show for your effort except a damp trail that will soon be wiped out by the sun. Anyone ever feel that way? You are in good company, okay? So, like, just go back to the book of Psalms. Like, the book of Psalms is really our prayer book. This is where we go back to, in many ways, to learn how to pray. And let me just put you a few verses up here, because we've got this. So these are all just from various Psalms. "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" That's Psalm 13. "How long, O Lord, will you be angry forever?" Psalm 79. And then my personal favorite, "Rouse yourself. Why do you sleep, O Lord? Awake, do not cast us off forever. Why do you hide your face? Why do you forget our affliction and oppression?" So when was the last time you heard that last one in a public prayer of, "Wake up, God. Like, I'm talking here, and you seem to be asleep." Like, this is what the psalmists tell us about prayer, and it's a lot of why? How long? And if you are following Jesus and you are engaged in a life of prayer, I can guarantee you will assuredly experience the silence of God. This is a common and repeated experience of all who pray. And Luke knows this. And Luke says, don't lose heart. Which, as I was thinking about this week, I actually find kind of comforting. Because remember, this is to Jesus' disciples, and Luke is saying, hey, as a follower of Jesus, there's going to be times where you're going to want to lose heart. Like, you're going to feel really discouraged. Like, Luke assumes that that's going to be part of the journey of following Jesus. You're going to feel like you're praying and you got nothing to show for it. And when that happens, don't lose heart. Listen to this story that Jesus told. So here's the story. It's really a short parable compared to some of the other ones we were looking at. Can you do the next slide? He said, "In a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' For some time he refused, but finally he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice, so that she won't eventually come and attack me.'" Interesting line. So who's this judge character? So the main thing we're told about this judge is he neither fears God nor cares what people think. Meaning, if you show up in a court of law, like, this is not the guy you want to be your judge. You should be nervous. Because standing before a judge in court is nerve-wracking anyway, right? Can I get an amen? No? I've been there. When I moved to this area, so, like, you guys all know this area, but if you're going up 46, the speed limit around South Range drops really fast. So it's like 55 to 20. And if you're listening to a podcast and really immersed in it, it's kind of foggy, you don't see those flashing lights, and you get pulled over, and it's a school zone, and so you got to go to court, okay? Just so you know, this was so you know why I was in front of the judge. I always see flashing lights in school zones. The law works sometimes. So I'm someone with resources. It was a pretty relatively minor thing. I was standing in front of a judge before. And the court system is, of course, imperfect. But I, for someone like me, generally, I think the court system works, right? I think what it worked. And even with all that, when I stood up in front of that judge, I just felt terrified. Like, you are at the mercy of that judge. And that was a really kind of nice judge who was very merciful to me. But this judge, you don't want this judge. Because like I said, he doesn't fear God. He doesn't care what other people think. In other words, he's shameless. Like, he's got no levers to pull to try to get him to act like he should. You can't pull the appeal to higher authority lever. He doesn't care about God. And you can't pull the peer pressure lever because he doesn't care what other people think. I mean, think about it. Like, you've experienced this in certain situations. Like, you go into somewhere and you kind of recognize really quickly, like, the person working there doesn't really care what you think. And maybe doesn't care what the boss thinks. Like, thankfully, like, if you're at McDonald's and things go wrong in your order, like, you got two options, which you guys might not exercise. But you got two options. You can call the manager, right? You can go and appeal to authority. Or you can, like, pull out your phone and be like, hey, can you believe this guy? You can videotape what's happening, and hopefully the peer pressure will, like, rectify the situation, right? So you've got, like, some levers to pull. But this guy, he's got no levers. He's got no shame. He doesn't care what people think. He doesn't care what God thinks. He's gone, in a sense, rogue. And to make it even worse, like, look at the person standing in front of this powerful judge. It's a widow. So many of you know this, a widow in Old Testament times, that's the classic symbol for a vulnerable person. Like, a widow joins the orphans and the strangers to form the trilogy of who represent the most vulnerable people in society. In other words, we know this lady is not like me. She doesn't have resources. She probably is alone in court, right, or alone in front of this judge because there's no males in her life that would normally do that. And she is in need of justice. Someone has wronged this woman and defrauded her. And it may be an older woman, but people married really young then, so it's not necessarily an older person. This could be someone quite young. Now, a good judge in this time, they would show care to that widow. Like, they should be sympathetic to her. But this one just ignores her. And what does she do? She can't say, for the sake of God, you know, right this, make this right. He doesn't fear God. She can't say, for my sake. He doesn't care about people. So she plays the only card she's got. She pleads with him constantly. She pounds on his door in the middle of the night. She tracks him down in town and accosts him in the street. She badgers him relentlessly. And for a while, the judge refuses. But finally, the judge says to himself, enough is enough. I don't care about God. I don't care about other people. But this widow is driving me nuts. This widow is driving me crazy. So much that I will get her justice, because eventually she's going to attack me. And this is really interesting, because so like some versions will just say she'll continue to bother me, I think. A better translation is attack, but really the best translation is she's going to come give me a black eye. That's the literal translation of that. This is a boxing term. This word in Greek that he says is a boxing term. This widow is shadow boxing with the judge. Yeah, which should add like a comic element to the story. We realize that this is kind of a funny story, but it also should give us a picture of this widow. This isn't some meek and mild widow. This woman has some spunk. This woman's got some tenacity. This woman's got some serious courage. She's up against the ropes, so to speak. She has been wronged. She is vulnerable. She's a lightweight, so to speak. And she stands before a powerful and shameless judge, a heavyweight, who blinks, who cries uncle, who relents. It's the judge. That's kind of the, I told you there's usually a twist, and this one's not quite as much. That's kind of the twist, is who blinks? It's the judge. The widow, in the end, gets what she set out to get. And then that's really the end of the parable. And now Jesus is going to explain this parable. So Luke gives us a preface to it. Now Jesus is going to explain it. And Jesus says, listen to the unjust judge. Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? So we need to do some work with this. Because if we're not careful, we can really misread this parable. So someone could read this and say, okay, Luke is telling me I shouldn't give up on praying, okay. And now Jesus has given me this story about this widow who badgers a judge and she finally gets what she wants. So God's the judge, like I must be the widow, and my plan here is to badger God until he gets me what I want. And some of you who are parents, you know this strategy. It's been played on you. It's been played on me. Like, kids look pretty relatively harmless sometimes, but they are ruthless in identifying weak spots. And once they identify that weak spot, they will not stop until they know there's no other way, there's no chance they have. And you got to be careful because that child will wear you down until you're finally like, just go watch TV. I don't want you to watch TV, but I really just want peace. Only you're like a little like that judge. Like, I will do at this point whatever just to get a little bit of peace. At least I've done that. Some of you other parents, maybe not. But God is the parent. I am the child that needs to wear him down. But here's what we miss here. The judge is not God. In fact, the judge is everything that God is not. That's what you need to see here. The judge is uncaring and evil, he's possibly corrupt, he's indifferent to injustice. He'll act for justice, he'll do the right thing, but only as a last resort. Only just in this kind of self-interested way will he do this to get peace and avoid getting a black eye. God is the exact opposite. And what Jesus is doing, he's doing this rabbinic argument, this is really common back then, of saying, how much more? So look at the judge, he's corrupt, he's uncaring, he's a self-centered jerk, and yet, in the end, he vindicates the widow because she's persistent. In that case, how much more will the righteous judge, namely God, vindicate his people who prayed to him with persistency and constancy? You kind of see what Jesus is doing here? How much more? I'm going to give you one example. We saw this a little bit in the parable of the shrewd manager. These people are doing this. How much more should my disciples do? And let's return now to the question we kind of started with. Luke is saying this is going to be a story about praying and not losing heart. And Jesus is saying, look, there's going to be times where you're going to feel like the widow. You're going to pray and pray and pray, and it's going to seem like you got nothing to show for it. It's going to seem like you got nothing but an empty bucket with all the water drained out to show for it. It's going to feel like you are hurling requests into a wall of silence. It's going to feel like, how long, how long, how long, why, why? But don't lose heart, because God hears you. And he will bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him, and he will do it quickly. So in this story, like, it seems like all the action with the widow is happening really quickly, but it's probably taking a little bit of time because we hear that she goes back and back and pleading for justice. And in her case, there's this uncertainty, like, this guy's a jerk. Is he going to actually act for justice on my behalf? But for us, as God's people, we know who the petition is going to. Like, we trust in the character of God. We trust that God is a good God, and we know that God is a God who rescues. How do we know that? Because we take the long view. Because time and time again, when we see Scripture unfolding, in story after story, we know that God is a God who ultimately delivers. It doesn't always seem like that in the moment. Sometimes it seems like God's not doing much at all. But we know over our long history that when God speaks to his people, God involves himself in his people's lives, he involves himself in our life. And here's the deal, and this Peterson points this out, we don't ever get the whole story. That's what's so frustrating. in our small perspective, we only get a little slice. And Peterson writes, necessarily there will be many mysteries that you will never comprehend. And he kind of has in brackets, I love this, a God who you can understand is not God. Okay, a God that you don't want to serve, a God that you fully understand. Because God is so much bigger than what we see. And I think it's good for us to remember, we get glimpses of God, but we don't fully understand God, and that is a good thing. But Peterson says there are good, light-filled mysteries. So these mysteries, these things we don't understand, we trust that they're good, not ominous, evil-tinged mysteries, right? Because we realize it's not the judge. Yes, there's mystery, but we trust in the character of God. We trust in the track record of God. We can't see the whole story. But we trust that the way the story is unfolding is that a God is rescuing his creation. And so we do not lose hope. We do not lose heart because we know where the story is going. I mean, think about this again as a parent. So often when that question, why, comes up, what you want to do as a parent is say, you're just seeing a little piece of the story, right? This looks crazy what we're doing right now. But your mother and I, we are seeing 20, 30, 40 years, right? We're seeing a big picture of this. And what you want to say to a child is, I know this doesn't make sense to you. I know whatever decision you've made, but do you trust in who we are? Do you trust that our intentions for you are good? And we practice that trust. That's a practiced trust, and hopefully we're imperfect parents, so that doesn't always work out. But Jesus has taught us in the Lord's Prayer, there is a perfect parent that we can trust, and he teaches us to pray to that parent when we say, Our Father. That our petitions are not being hurled at an uncaring judge, but to a loving and intimate parent father. I was from a class at AMBS. The teacher was kind of doing an embodied way of praying the Lord's Prayer. And the motion that's, so each petition has a motion. And the one that stuck out the most to me was, it begins with, Our Father, and she held up her hands in the air. And you know this motion, right? It's like a child, what he does to a parent. Pick me up. I love that. Because when we're praying, we're saying, pick me up. Lift me up. Don't lose heart. Because if justice is granted to this widow from an uncaring judge, how much more will justice be granted from a God who is everything this judge is not? So let's kind of get a little more practical here. Is it appropriate to ask God again and again and again for something? Absolutely. This is what we see affirmed here, actually. Persistence in prayer is absolutely appropriate for believers. We can trust that God is good. We can trust that God will right all injustices one day. And at the same time, we can ask God for things now. In our study of the Lord's Prayer, we saw that in the petition of, give us today our daily bread. We have space to give these requests to God. God invites us to do this. And I said, it's really hard to have a robust prayer life if you don't believe in the power of prayer. But often as we bring these requests to God, we don't hear response. I think the encouragement from Jesus is keep praying. Don't lose heart. Even in the silence, keep bringing those petitions to prayer. But as disciples of Jesus, we also need to be listening to God. So sometimes there's a silence. Sometimes we're praying, we're giving our request to God, and we hear nothing, okay? I think Jesus' admonition there would be, keep praying. Sometimes there's really not a clear answer. I think the admonition there is, keep praying. But sometimes there is an answer. It just might not be the answer we're looking for. So God maybe has denied our request, or what I think happens more often is that God has a different solution than one requested. Like sometimes God has in fact answered a request that's just not what we were looking for, and he's given us a different solution. And our response, and this is hard, our response is, thy will be done. And this is Jesus teaching us here. Remember, Jesus experienced this firsthand. So on the Mount of Olives, Jesus is about to be crucified. Jesus says to the Father in prayer, will you take this cup from me? In other words, Jesus says to the Father, is there any other way? At that point, I was looking at this passage, it's really interesting in Luke. At that point, an angel comes and strengthens Jesus. So he keeps praying. It's like we don't know like if Jesus has been giving an answer at that time, but he keeps praying. Perhaps at that point, Jesus had not received a clear answer. So we read that he prays more earnestly, so intensely that his sweat becomes like blood. And at some point, Jesus must receive a response. He must receive the response, it's not possible. It's not possible. And I imagine that was painful for Jesus. To ask the Father, who he knew so well, and to hear back, no. But what does Jesus do? He rises up. He rises up from the prayer and he walks to the cross. Because he has also said in that same prayer, not my will, but yours be done. Jesus knew the Father. He could do that because he knew the Father. He knew the character of the Father. He trusted the Father. He knew that the Father was nothing like that judge. And therefore, he could entrust himself to the Father's will. And something very similar happened to Paul. Remember in 2 Corinthians, we hear about this thorn in his flesh. I mean, you guys have probably, a lot of you heard that. Like, we don't even really know what this thorn was. But whatever it was, you know, Paul was a pretty tough guy, like prison, beatings, all this stuff. And Paul, this must have been bad because Paul prayed 3 times for God to take away this thorn. And Paul, like I said, Paul was not one to complain about harsh circumstances. And 3 times he heard no. And what he eventually heard from God was, Jesus was, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. So are we to be persistent in our request to God? Absolutely. But we also do need to do the hard work of listening to God and finding out what is the answer here and entrusting ourselves to the will of God. So let's keep going. Verse 8, I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. So Luke has told us at the beginning of this parable that this is going to be about prayer and this is going to be about not giving up. And I think we can absolutely apply this to our personal prayer lives, as we've done. But this prayer, I think it's pretty obvious, is particularly directed to people who are experiencing injustice, like the widow, who feel like justice is not happening. And so when Luke is writing all this down, it's been a couple generations since Jesus would have told this parable, and the community of believers, the early church, is starting to experience some oppressive conditions. And Luke is trying to tell that community, don't give up. Vindication is coming. And it's going to come quickly. And so, yes, I think this parable has something to say to all of us, but I think it's particularly a word for those experiencing injustice. Remember the hero of the story. She's a widow. And the widow has experienced injustice. In his commentary on Luke, Fred Craddock recounts a time where, in a setting where people were talking about unfair and oppressive conditions in society, an elderly black minister reads this parable. He reads the parable, and the elderly black minister gives a one-sentence interpretation. It's this. Until you have stood for years knocking at a locked door, your knuckles bleeding, you do not really know what prayer is. What is prayer? The life of prayer is asking and seeking and knocking. It's one of waiting. It's one of wondering, why am I even doing this? It's having one's trust falter. It's wondering, is justice ever going to come? It's growing angry like the psalmist. And for some people in our society, in our world, it's feeling like you have been knocking on a door that is locked until your knuckles are bleeding. And Jesus says, in particular to those people, don't lose heart. Because one day, there's going to be a reckoning. One day, there's going to be a day of justice. And I think this parable cuts both ways. Because I think for many of us, and I'll just speak for myself, I do not relate to that experience of that elderly black minister. I have not experienced injustice in my life like that. I think the call to some of us like myself is, don't be like that unjust judge. Don't be denying vulnerable people in our society justice. Don't be ignoring pleas from vulnerable people. Don't act like there's no God, because a day is coming, and Jesus says it's coming quickly. Remember the psalmist's question, how long, how long, how long? And Jesus' response to that is not very long at all. If you're anything like me, when I first read that, I was like, oh, it seems like a long time. I mean, I'm only 40 years old, and I've been hearing about the coming of Jesus my whole life, and it seems like it's been a long time, and it's been a couple thousand years. But remember, we're just getting a tiny slice of the world here, right? So in the big scheme of things, in a universe that is something like 13.8 billion years old, it's coming quickly. From God's perspective, the Son of Man is coming soon. And when you think about that, so that's just the world. Think about our own lives in that equation, in that 13.8 billion years. Our own particular judgments are coming even quicker. Why? Why hold on? Why don't lose heart? Because God will bring justice to his people. And in the meantime, his disciples are going to need some grit. They're going to need some stamina. They're going to need some persistence. They're going to need some courage like this scrappy widow, right? I love this widow. She's the hero. And Luke, if you look at who ends up looking really good towards the end of Jesus' life, it's a lot of women. Who's going to anoint Jesus? It's a woman. Who's faithful to Jesus to the cross? It's women. Who is there on Sunday morning? It's women. Okay? Luke has a really high view of the women disciples in his story. You're going to need grit like this widow, because the injustices of this world are not going to be made right in this lifetime. See, Jesus is not speaking about an earthly vindication. Like, if you and I are waiting for vindication of everything, if we are waiting for governments and dictators and corrupt governments and corrupt court systems, and if we're waiting for that all to be made right, and if we're waiting for the injustices done to us as individuals, especially the vulnerable people like immigrants and widows and orphans, if we're waiting for all those injustices to be vindicated in a court of law, we're going to be waiting a long time. Because Jesus is talking about a final judgment, a final vindication, in which the Son of Man comes again. Which is, interestingly, exactly what we're encouraged to think about during the season of Advent. So Advent, I've said this probably several times, Advent always messes with my head. Because Advent starts and I'm like, all right, let's get prepared for Jesus' birth. And if you notice, the first gospel reading, Advent, is never about Jesus' birth. It's always about Jesus' second coming. And you're like, oh, wait, what? And then you have to go back and like, oh yeah, Advent isn't just the birth of Christ. Advent is looking at the second coming of Christ before it turns to the birth. Advent always begins by looking ahead to the second coming of Christ. And Jesus is saying, that's coming, and it's coming quicker than you think it is. And then Jesus ends with what one guy I saw, Brad Pease, says, is a really haunting line. This is a really he says it's one of the most haunting lines of the New Testament. And that is, however, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? He's saying it's haunting because, I don't know about you, but when Jesus asked that question, the implied answer is no. Will the Son of Man find faith on earth? No, maybe not. And so Jesus is using this to say to his disciples, what do you need to do? If you see lots of darkness in the world and sin and falling away from the faith, and we see that, it can be really discouraging. If you see scandals within the church, like we see so often, if we see Christians acting in ways that are completely contrary to our Lord Jesus Christ, that's really discouraging, right? And understandably, some people are like, I've had it. I've had it. They're going to give up on the faith. But Jesus is saying, what do you need to do? And he's saying, don't lose heart. Even with all that, don't lose heart. Even when things look really bad around the world, and sometimes when they look, and it's even more painful, really bad in the church, don't lose heart. And what's our response? What's our response as disciples? to pray, to not give up, to not lose heart.